You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/givetech.
It's Marketplace Tech for October 1st. From New York, I'm Mark Garrison, in for Ben Johnson. Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey is set to become CEO. Recode reports Dorsey, currently Twitter's interim leader, is getting the job full-time. Dorsey is also CEO of payments company Square, so he's looking at doing two huge jobs at two huge companies at once. With us now to talk about what kind of challenge that would be is Wharton School professor Kartik Hosanagar. Hi, Kartik.
Hi, thanks for having me.
There is some precedent in tech for this. Steve Jobs ran Apple and Pixar at the same time. Elon Musk runs Tesla, also SpaceX. But how difficult would it be to pull off running Twitter and Square at the same time?
It's no easy task because they're two very different companies. Twitter, as we all know, is a media company that's focused on professional content. And then you have Square, which is a payments company. So it's not like there are natural synergies between the two companies. So it's by no means a trivial task.
And the previous examples of situations like this are in one way or another tech companies that we just talked about. And is there something about tech that you have these kind of double CEO situations? Why do we hear about tech companies having these kind of arrangements?
You know, CEO of a company is essentially, you know, a role about leadership, about setting the strategic vision of the company. And so technology by itself doesn't make that any task easier. But I think that technology companies are willing to break the rules, are willing to try new things. And so it does reflect that.
And when you have companies as different, as you point out, as Twitter and Square, with different users, different sources of revenue, how can leading both of those companies at the same time be a good idea?
In my opinion, the only way it can actually be good is if there are strategic synergies, if there are ways in which one can leverage your role in the other company in some way. But if not, really one is making a compromise, and we have to accept that.
All right, Kartik Hosanagar at the Wharton School. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Driverless car technology keeps moving forward, but there may be a point where the computers get a little too good. Come on, admit it, you are not a perfect driver. And the thing is, driverless cars, for now, have to share the same roads as human drivers. That difference between how computers drive and how we drive gets tricky. It can even lead to collisions. So engineers sometimes need to make computers think a little more like us, with all of our imperfections. Alistair Barr of the Wall Street Journal is covering how Google is dealing with this engineering challenge. Hello, Alistair.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right. So, Alistair, give us some examples of situations where a driverless car could act a little too much like a robot.
So one of the best examples is on a corner. When people started driving, being driven around in these cars, it felt weird to go so wide. And it also didn't really indicate to other human drivers around what the intention of the car was. It took this really wide turn, and it looked weird from the outside and felt strange when you were in the car.
And that signaling, it's important to the other drivers, because there have been some minor collisions involving these driverless cars from Google, and Google claims it was not at fault. But there is some evidence, as you point out, that the way they were programmed may have played a role just in terms of how the other drivers reacted. Explain what happened there. I know this was about braking in particular.
Yeah. So, for instance, we were driving along in this car in the test drive in July, and we were coming up to a traffic light, and we were in a left-hand turn. This other car came up behind us quite fast on the right, and the car, the Google car, jabbed the brakes. And we were kind of saying, what happened there? That's very, very strange. There's nothing happening. And the software engineer in the car said, well, what happened was it saw this car coming up on the right, and it made a prediction that it might cut in front of us into our lane. There was a car behind us, which there wasn't. If there was a car behind us and some human was there texting on their phone instead of looking up properly, you know, they might, when the Google car jabs on the brakes, they might, you know, run into the back of us and give us a bump. a lot of the crashes that the car have been in are these small sort of slow speed bumps where they get rear-ended.
Okay, Alistair Barr at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Danny Shapiro is Senior Director of Automotive Technology at NVIDIA, which makes driverless car technology. To get computers to drive like us requires teaching them to think like us, using the intriguing corner of computer science called deep learning.
What we've done is come up with a computer model to simulate how the human brain functions. And if you think about how a child learns, it's when they're exposed to new experiences and they store that information. So the same thing holds true in the case of deep learning for the cars, but instead of just a limited amount of information, we have the ability to feed a car computer hundreds of thousands or millions of miles worth of driving expertise.
Drivers or not, cars need tires, the selling of which is the original raison d'etre for one of the world's most coveted restaurant honors, the Michelin Guide. Started as a way to encourage people to hit the road, check out more restaurants, and ultimately use more Michelin tires. The latest New York edition is now out, which means some restaurants are getting a slew of new customers and hyping their star ratings on social media. Ryan Sutton of Eater New York says Michelin stars still have meaning, but online sites like Yelp and TripAdvisor are carving out their own place. For one, Michelin focuses more on high-end restaurants, plus online sites gather the views of a big crowd, updated often.
Yelp is actually a little bit more helpful than a Michelin review because at least with Yelp, you have one person's account of how a meal was last night or two nights ago. Whereas if you go to a Michelin review, which is not a review, it's more of a blurb, it's almost hard to tell if you read that Michelin blurb whether they're giving it one star or two star or three stars.
I'm Mark Garrison, and that's our show today. You can find us anytime at marketplacetech.org. Leave a review of any amount of stars you would wish to give for us, and check out some of the other stories we have. This is APM, American Public Media.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.